Okay, all right. I'll talk fast. I did want to note that we have another issue with the 1% in the requirements of the February 15th letter. And our proposal was a little bit different, to say that new projects with 5,000 square feet or more of new impervious surface, the post-construction runoff flows shall not exceed the pre-development runoff peak flows for a range of rainfall events with a return periods of 1 to 10 years. And that is basically the same for both redevelopment projects and new projects. Redevelopment projects are, of the total project area shall reduce post-construction runoff peak flows to 10% less than the pre-existing development, and that way you've got an improvement over the pre-existing development runoff peak flows. And those are for those projects that are on lots over 10,000 square feet and that replace or add 5,000 square feet or more of impervious surface. Going on from there, we have 3 points that we are concerned about and we don't think are going to be feasible for us to implement. Item number 3 is the voluntary business consultation. Voluntary business consultation was intended not as an inspection program, which we have in our swamp, and not as a public education program per se, handing out pamphlets and such, but as a specific, like, business audit that we could offer to people so that before they get the inspection, they could find out about stormwater and say, gosh, I want to make sure that my business passes, so let me learn about it, have a consultation, and then move on. The requirement for 5 voluntary business inspections goes contrary to that because we can't force ourselves to walk into a business and say, hey, you're having a voluntary business inspection. That doesn't work. We do have an inspection program in our plan, and we are wanted to offer this as an educational feature for businesses that want to get ahead of the game and make sure that they're in compliance so that they don't have a problem when they do have an inspection.
Let me ask one question on that item. In what manner does the city offer this audit that could be helpful to them in informing them what may come up in terms of problems that the inspection would trigger? Is there a time frame in which a targeted business would receive information about the potential for this assistance through an audit of this type, this voluntary process? Are you systematically going to be promoting the idea that there's a prelude or a preliminary step that could be very informative and helpful to them? Or how will that occur? Because if I were a business owner and I knew that a hard inspection was coming and I was being offered technical assistance to do a pre-evaluation with no tickets issued, I would be very interested in that. And I think 5 in 5 years doesn't seem like a huge number. So I'm curious what your view is on that.
Okay. I think that there's quite a possibility 5 people will request that. We're just putting that as we want to offer that out and hope that those people take, hope that more people take advantage of it.
How does that occur is what I'm trying to get to.
Because we have not gotten a permit yet or implemented this program, we don't know the exact specifics, but I would expect not a limited time frame. Within the 5-year period, the whole thing would be, for the whole time, 5-year period, anyone could ask for such an inspection. And
the time frame I'm referring to is you're probably going to develop a schedule for inspections.
Correct.
And you would probably notify those individuals that on such and such a date, maybe 3 months out, you're going to be expecting someone to come in and inspect your premises for these conditions. And so I'm saying to you, in that time frame, are you offering the opportunity for this preliminary audit so that it's kind of systematic and part of the process of engaging the discharger?
I would say yes, but on a more general note, because we don't want to tell a business, we're coming to inspect you on this date. We would put that out ahead of time and say, look, we're going to do inspections, so you need to know this. And we have various means of putting things out. We can put things in the paper, we can put things on our website, we can hand things out at city events. So there are a number of ways that we have of reaching the public. Our city council meetings are televised, and a lot of people watch them. So we would get that message out, but we don't want to tell them the date and time we're going to inspect. Item number two is the San Miguelito Creek cleanup. As you saw, San Miguelito Creek dumps out into a riparian area. Can you get me that next slide? Down. Yeah, that one. This is what San Miguelito Creek at that outfall looks like. The banks are very steep, and the water can back up and become extremely deep. There is some trash there, as you can see, but it's all kind of come from a high flow where, is that it? High flow where it's deposited in trees everywhere. So what we're feeling is that we can't really do this in a one-year time frame. We need the time frame of the five-year period because we need a consultant. We need to go ahead, and we may need to get permits to cut some of that riparian vegetation back to even get to the trash. And we don't feel that can be accomplished in 1 year. And we would like to have the whole permit term to work on that project. Item number 14 is the city landfill.
Can I interrupt you 1 second? How much of the creek looks like that?
You know, once it reaches that point, it's not a creek anymore. It's just kind of like a riparian.
Okay.
It has a channel that flood control has cut, but in years of high flow, the whole river backs up and deposits whatever, and Miguelito Creek backs up, and the whole thing becomes much higher.
So this is all lower than the that last storm drain system?
It's all
in that
below the storm drain, system.
Yes. Mm. And you know, this, a lot of it in talking with people who've seen the area occurred maybe after the 98 really high flood waters. The city agrees to clean it up. You know, we say, yeah, it needs to be cleaned up, but trying to do it in those steep slopes with the deep water, with all the brush, and that's in the one place we can actually access it. Most places, trying to even get a picture, you'd have to use a machete to get through. It's very dense vegetation. So what we're feeling is that within 1 year, we're not going to be able to accomplish all of it. We would like the full five-year permit term to address this issue. But we do feel it needs to be addressed.
Does the city own this property?
The city owns a portion of the property. I think the Bureau of Prisons owns the other.
Would you be cleaning up the entire parcel?
I don't know that we would necessarily be cleaning up the Bureau of Prisons portion.
Okay, the Bureau of Prisons.
Well, is it this trashed all the way down, or is it?
I expect not. I think it was probably held at a certain point. But I haven't been able to get in there to see because I didn't have a machete.
But at the point that it's held, does the city own that land?
This portion here, yes.
Okay.
So this would be obviously a target area.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah, you got another 15 minutes.
Okay, so let me use that time.
Go ahead.
Okay. The third item that we have a concern about is the city landfill.
Mm-hmm.
If you could give me the next slide. We have a debris basin at the bottom of the city landfill. And the debris basin is currently, we just cleaned it out. We took out 12,000 cubic feet of material from the debris basin in preparation for this storm season. And we believe the debris basin, one, was designed to address the flow from the landfill, and that it's adequate at this time. But at the same time, landfills are very detailed, regulated by the Integrated Waste Management Board, regulated by the regional board. And so they have a lot of regulations to deal with, and we have all kinds of detailed planning as far as how we're going to build out that landfill to maximize the space and maximize its utility over the next 40 years. The thing that's going to happen is we've already gotten under contract. We're in the first phase of identifying the existing conditions at the landfill, building out. Then in year two, we do the build-out evaluation of what's going to happen and what's the best way to optimize our landfill. And then in the third year, look at the storm drain system and see how can we manage that storm drain system and are there changes that we're going to need to make to manage the build-out of that landfill. And those are things that we don't know the answer to yet. It is an engineering study that's currently in progress. We think our current basin is going to be adequate for the time of that study, And at the end of the study, we'll have recommendations as to how we can change it. But we also don't feel that we can go ahead and finish the study any faster than it's identified in our contract. And we also don't think that we can go ahead and necessarily make all the changes, if there are changes required, before the end of year three, because any changes would need permits through the Integrated Waste Management Board, et cetera, et cetera. Thank you. That concludes my presentation.
Okay. Any additional board questions or comments at this point? Okay.
I do have a question for Ms. Dunham.
Go ahead.
I just want to clarify your concern about the February 15th and July 10th letter is in the required revision number 17, and that you and, well, it's to section 7, but it's item number 17, that you interpret that to mean that you have a year to come up with hydro modification criteria, but if you don't do that, then you have to do exactly what's said in the letter. Is that what your concern is?
Well, one of our concerns, absolutely, yes. The when you read the two letters collectively and with the table required revisions, we have to come up with interim criteria within 1 year. If within that 1 year, the city's interim criteria are not acceptable to the regional board, then it automatically defaults to the interim criteria that are in the February 15th letter.
Okay, I just want to clarify what your concern is. Thanks.
Yeah.
Matt.
Chairman Young, yes. Water Board staff requests about 5 minutes for rebuttal of the city's testimony.
Okay.
You want to do that now, or do you want to wait for after all the public comments?
Well, if staff wants to do it now, that's fine.
Okay.
Thanks. I'll start out here. Ms. Dunham spent a lot of time talking about the effective impervious area requirement or interim criteria in the February 15th letter. We believe that's really a red herring argument. We expect the city to develop hydro modification controls that work for them. We expect that it will include something to minimize and disconnect impervious surfaces, but it need not necessarily be the same EIA requirement that we put in our February 15th letter. And we also appreciate Board Member Shallcross clarifying that effective impervious area being limited to 5% does not mean you're limiting the total imperviousness of the site to 5%. But it means you have to disconnect it from other impervious surfaces.
But I think that really needs to be clarified, because that's a big point of confusion or misunderstanding,
okay,
intended or otherwise.
Sure. Well, in a minute here, I'd be glad to read the footnote that is in our February 15th letter. Basically, what it says, any impervious area that drains to a pervious area, like a landscape feature or a bioswale, is not considered effective impervious area. So, in other words, you could have a project site with a high percentage of imperviousness, but as long as it is draining into a landscape feature or something pervious, it does not count as effective impervious area.
Okay, so the slide that Dominic showed earlier of new development, and it had the cul-de-sacs and the streets, mm-hmm, and everything. An example of that complying with the requirement would be what? Because clearly you have hardscape, pervious structure that is greater than 5%.
Yeah, and that okay, is why the effective impervious area requirement is only one of several. This is one of a suite of requirements used to control hydro modification. Minimizing and disconnecting imperviousness is only one part of controlling hydro modification. Controlling volume through decentralized stormwater controls is another big part of it.
Okay. And with that example, though, what you're saying, and can you easily put that back up?
Yep. Yeah, I wanted to just say, in the case of the cul-de-sac development, let's see if this is going to come up here. It doesn't like all this demand. Its brain hurts. In that case, the principal imperviousness of that development are going to be streets and rooftops. So rooftops that are disconnected downspouts, that their downspouts don't go directly to concrete and that concrete doesn't go directly to storm drain, those aren't counted as part of the impervious, effective impervious area. So you lose, you know, you automatically reduce your total imperviousness down, you know, to some percentage. And then if you can somehow address the issue of the streetscape, you could also achieve disconnect, provide sort of bioswales so that the streets were draining through bioswales or other some sort of impervious area, you could disconnect the streets. So the result is that you could disconnect all that impervious area, or not all of it, but a fair amount of it.
Okay.
I don't know what's going on. I don't think. Yeah, it's working. Okay. Sorry.
I mean, Ms. Lawson, I'm going to, you know, ask you later after this if that makes sense, because that essentially explains the concern that you have, that when you have a typical development, you've got all this roof structure, you've got driveways, you've got sidewalks, you know, you might have 70% impervious hardscape. But if these are disconnected with impervious, with pervious substrate, then you have satisfied the requirement and disconnected them from that formula.
I want to caution us not to engage in too much consideration of specific criteria, because as Matt said and as we've pointed out, we are not proposing the imposition of an EIA of 5% on the city of Lompoc today. We're proposing that they develop a set of hydro modification criteria. Mm-hmm. And that criteria such as EIA, or controls on and thresholds of imperviousness, are appropriate types of controls for hydro modification. That mm-hmm. The EIA in particular is valuable because it drives a certain kind of site design. You can't just address that through building a basin and diverting everything to a basin or an underground vault. It actually drives changes in the way sites are designed, and that's a huge goal of low-impact development and an advantage to distributed stormwater management. But to go back to Matt, I want us to not get preoccupied with arguments over EIA or the 1% matching or whatever. But
isn't that essentially what you are requiring, is an equivalent to 5% EIA?
No. When we state that we expect an equivalency, what we're talking about is equivalency and its effectiveness. What could be equivalent to 5% EIA except 5% EIA? But what could be equivalent to the effect of reducing imperviousness down to 5%? A lot of things. You could achieve that effect through on-site facilities. You could actually achieve it in part. Part of the effect could be addressed through detention basins and bioswales. So when we talk about actually comparing these criteria, the city's criteria, to our February 15th criteria, the objective is to look at the effectiveness of them. And because every environment in which hydro modification is applied and developed is different, the effectiveness equation will be different. So in a circumstance like Lompoc, where you have some tight soil environments, an EIA of 5% might not really buy you any more protection than a 10% EIA or something comparable. But the point is, we're trying to achieve filtration or treatment and volume control. And there are other ways to do that than EIA, and the city is an opportunity to develop those and to make them appropriate for the city of Lompoc. And the determination of whether those are MEP will be made when they present them.
Well, the city feels it has done that. It presented a 25% EIA,
right,
which staff has rejected.
We've rejected it because they did not substantiate it with any technical-based information. They have that opportunity in the next year to develop that information, to resubmit a 25% threshold and say this is why it works for Lompoc.
So it's got to work the same way 5% would work.
Yeah, it's got to achieve the same degree of filtration and reduction in rates and flows of runoff.
And where does the 5% come from? I mean, it's being claimed to be just an arbitrary number.
Yeah, I guess its principal proponent is Richard Horner, who's a University of Maryland professor who's been involved in stormwater management issues for years and years, and is quite a prominent scientist in that arena. But the and again, it's meant to be kind of a proxy for arriving at measures that protect groundwater, or rather protect surface waters from pollutants, as well as protecting them from hydromodification, the erosive flows. But in Southern California, the Southern California Coastal Water Resources Project developed a report that examined the effect of imperviousness on watershed scales, and they identified thresholds of 3 to 5% as being that point at which you start to see an effect on stream channel stability. In our view, that's a very good indication that the kinds of environments in this particular part of the region are susceptible to hydromodification from imperviousness that exceeds that. So we're trying to identify a metric in our February 15th letter that could actually be applicable region-wide and provide us we could be assured that it would provide us protection. So again, it's been used and proposed in the Ventura permit. We saw that. We considered it to be an appropriate strategy, for principally because it drives this whole question of site design. But we didn't stop there. We identified the opportunity for the city to develop its own applicability criteria. It doesn't have to use EIA everywhere. It doesn't have to use EIA at all. But whatever it chooses to use, it needs to provide a specific set of criteria in which it applies them. So, for example, if it doesn't think it's appropriate to apply impervious thresholds within its infill projects because of adjacent structures that somehow are going to be threatened or undermined by excessive infiltration, that's a reasonable criteria to propose and say, look, we've got to protect these adjacent structures. So they can develop applicability criteria, and they can develop numeric criteria for the actual control.
The Ventura permit, has it been issued?
No, it is a proposed permit.
Okay. Has EPA weighed in on appropriate percentage for EIA?
Yeah, EPA's for pushing. They seem to be in favor of, or have been in favor of it in the past. Clearly, the regional board in the LA region is in favor of it.
Well, as a what number? What criteria?
5%.
5%.
Yeah, and it's again, and they have applicability criteria that are specific. They don't expect it to be everywhere. They have off ramps, example, opportunities to escape the requirement. But it is by no means resolved that EIAs of 5% or any other are appropriate criteria. I should point out that the National Academies report actually identified the. Let's see here. Do you want to read? Okay. They identified proxies, I think. Yeah, here's one. This is the kind of background scientific information that's the background to this discussion. It's really an argument at this point. But the point is that impervious cover are appropriate proxies for pollutant loading. Why? Because we can't go out and provide the level of knowledge, of detailed knowledge of stormwater constituents. We can't design filters and treatment processes that are 100% effective, and if we did, we'd then have to demonstrate their effectiveness, and there'd be this trial and error period which needs to proceed, and we don't want to stop that. But in the meantime, there are some proxies that are being proposed, like impervious thresholds. So that's kind of where that fits in.
Chairman Young, I'd like to make a few points for the record. I had only just begun. I think we're dwelling too much on this effective impervious area, but while we're on the topic, I'd like to remind you that in September, you adopted development standards for the city of Salinas, in which the city of Salinas committed to 0% effective impervious area. In other words, they're going to completely disconnect their impervious surfaces from existing systems, and they committed to a 5% threshold for redevelopment. So I think that speaks to the feasibility of doing it.
Can I just follow up on that a second? Isn't Salinas our only phase one city?
That is our only phase one, yes.
Okay. And so I just want to make, before we get off this, because I know we're beating this dead horse, but the resolution that's before us today doesn't include a requirement for Lompoc to maintain 5% EI.
Correct.
S, what is it, EI? Correct. Impervious surface.
Right.
Effective impervious surface, right?
Yeah, correct.
Okay, thanks.
Ms. Dunham also mentioned the CASCA letter that CASCA sent to us in June. To be clear, we considered that letter in our response to the, as part of the collective feedback we got to the February 15th letter, and it was considered as part of our July 10 letter response.
Matt, do we have a copy of that letter in our packet?
No, you don't. Okay. I have a copy here. I can make it available.
Regarding filters, our belief is that stormwater filters do not meet the maximum extent practicable standard. Stormwater filters are designed to remove some oil and grease from the low flow events, from parking lots, for example. They are designed to overflow during high events and bypass the filter device. The National Academy of Sciences, what we're talking about is controlling volume. This Academy of Sciences study that everybody's talking about today, in summary, it said that, you know, the reason that EPA's stormwater program is flawed is that the law is designed to target specific contaminants when the problem with stormwater often is one of volume. We're talking about through hydromodification control, limiting the total volume coming from the site. Stormwater filters, they don't remove metals, and they really do nothing to reduce the volume of runoff. We appreciate that the city is requiring them and that they are an improvement, but they are not the maximum extent practicable. The city argues that they don't want to infiltrate runoff from their parking lots because there's groundwater beneath the city. In my opinion, there's really no better filter for stormwater runoff than the soil. And so really the alternative is to send it into the creek. I would argue that because the city relies on that underlying groundwater supply, it's really a good place to maximize infiltration. And like Dominic pointed out, all the literature suggests that it's important to control impervious cover. Ms. Dunham suggested that, Lompoc has really not provided any evidence that what we are requiring is not technically or economically achievable. In fact, the weight of the literature, some of which is summarized in our last supplemental sheet, suggests that implementation or controlling hydromodification through implementation of low-impact development is, in fact, technically achievable, practical, and cost-effective. I'd also point out that the city pointed to a Center for Watershed Protection study to suggest that that application of low-impact development to redevelopment may not be achievable. But on the other hand, they claim that the same literature that we're using is premature. Lastly, I would suggest that the fact that San Miguelito Creek backs up and the county must clear vegetation in that riparian corridor in order for the system to drain might indicate that the city is sending too much volume downstream and would actually be a good place to maximize infiltration. Unless Dominic has anything to add.
I just had one point about the ramping up period. It is true that in the fact sheet for this general permit and the discussion of MEP, maximum extent practicable, that the five-year ramping up period was envisioned as an important first phase for the phase two municipalities. That permit was issued in 2003, and while Lompoc has not been enrolled, the phase two program is 5 years old, and a ramping up period has occurred in other parts of the state and in this state itself, in this region as well. So I think that continuing to rely on a ramping up period, a 5 year ramping up period, is no longer appropriate. I can almost guarantee you won't be seeing anything about 5 years of ramping up in the new phase two permit, which will be issued probably sometime in the next year.
Is that it, Matt?
That's all, yeah.
Okay. Any board comments?
Oh, I'm sorry. I had two things. I apologize. The issue of the landfill, if the city has addressed the capacity by a recent removal of some 1,000 cubic feet of sediment, that's a very positive step. But I wanted to present this image to you because it's the upper sediment basin for the landfill. And you can see a standpipe with perforations that go below the current sediment, accumulated sediment level. The way standpipes and these perforated standpipes are supposed to work is they're supposed to provide for some settling of the sediment before the water spills into and through these perforations. In this case, there's no opportunity for a settling before it spills in. You can see either because of the accumulation or because the perforated pipe, the perforations extend too far below the surface, that it's not effective in that manner. So while removing the sediment would increase the capacity, it might not afford any sedimentation advantages. This is the lower basin that they illustrated, another view of it, and you can see that it is a large area. But over in that right corner where the bushes turn reddish, well, that might not be the location. I think there's a drop culvert there. But the point is this connects hydrologically to the San Miguelito Creek channel. So if and when this overflows, it is a direct connection to San Miguelito Creek and to the San Ynez River. There's a lot of uncovered surfaces at most landfills. There's good reasons for that. In some cases, they can be covered and aren't, but there's no shortage of bare soils at this landfill, and I think this is probably the most telling example. I don't have my pointer, but the big white spot on the lower left is the entire landfill site. It represents a significant threat to water quality if the sediment that transports off of that bare surface is not captured and settled. So we're quite concerned about that issue. We just feel that a more aggressive schedule for addressing the capacity and function of the storm drain is appropriate.
What about the problem with the creek and access to it and being able to get permits and just accessibility? They feel that, you know, they want 5 years.
Yeah.
Staff's recommending 1 year.
To me, it just seems like an extended schedule. I think a better characterization of the problem is due. I admit that we don't have a very comprehensive view of the extent of the problem, the amount of trash, the length of reach affected. We also don't have a clear understanding from the city as to the various responsibilities of the county's flood control district and the city. But frankly, when it comes to permitting any kind of a stream restoration or improvement activity like that, most of the agencies, Fish and Game, and certainly the Water Board under its 401 certification authority, it expedites that kind of a process. Mm-hmm. And again, the Fish and Game Department shouldn't be requiring any kind of stream alteration agreements where there is no actual disturbance of the stream channel. So some clearing of brush above the trunk and, you know, not removing the trunks of the roots, they're prepared to allow that without any kind of extensive permitting.
I mean, it would seem from the photos that they put up that clearing out that creek is going to take a lot of labor. And this is like a foot-by-foot,
right,
you know, trash collection, mm-hmm, process that's not going to lend itself to mechanization very easily.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it could actually take a long time to actually get the trash out of there.
Right.
So that's another reason why not to kind of add additional time.
Right.
I mean, the permitting should be expedited and done quickly so that the amount of time to remove it is expanded, if necessary.
Well, when you say that we don't have a clear understanding of the reach of the problem and other components like that, what if they can't do it within a year? I mean, what if they've made some progress in terms of getting all the permits, and they have begun to cut their way into the channel and start the cleanup, but they're, you know, at the end of the first year in their annual report, they can't check off that they've completed this BMP. What happens?
Well, let's look at the BMP to make sure we aren't expanding the intent here. Item 10 states that the city needs to amend the BMP for cleaning up the creek to indicate earlier completion of trash removal and a commitment to inspect and clean up this area on a regular basis. They've currently proposed a 1 to 5 year schedule, meaning effectively we couldn't expect compliance until year 5. We could be looking for activity year 1, year 2, year 3, but compliance wouldn't be really a possibility until year 5. So we've simply asked an earlier completion of the trash removal. I would say that if they assess the conditions and determine that, in fact, the amount of labor, you know, sensitivity of the area is going to severely limit the, you know, the timing of this, we could examine that at the first opportunity and change this.
Okay, so it's not a one-year necessarily.
Yeah, I think this is a completely workable and flexible BMP.
Okay. What's that? If they get it done in 5 years, they'll be lucky?
Yeah, from my experience in trying to clean up any kind of a habitat like that, if they could get through it in 5 years, it would be a remarkable feat. So, I mean, but certainly they could show progress in the 5 years. And I think as long as we have progress going on and everything going forward, because a lot of it is going to be out of their control in the permitting.
Well, I think the language is flexible enough.
I do too, yeah. And I guess we don't agree on that, Mr. Hayashi. That I've worked with these agencies to address these problems, and they want to expedite this kind of problem. And I'd be interested to hear about your experiences, because maybe you got a raw deal. But we definitely want to address these quickly. The Army Corps of Engineers, Fish and Game, and the Regional Board have all coordinated.
Look at the flood control district there in Arroyo Grande. That is just a mess, and it's been going on for 20 years, and they've never come to agreement on anything. So, I mean, as long as I feel fine, as long as we could show that they could show that they're making progress and they're moving forward, to their best ability. I mean, that's all we could look for in that part. And it does have flexibility there to go on.
Okay. All right. Shall we go to speaker cards? Mr. Hodgins?
Yeah, just a question for the city of Lompoc. There's been a lot of discussion here, particularly relating to the 5% issue. And explanation of what it really means. Does any of this alleviate your concerns now? And you?
Thank you. No. Actually, that was just a misspoken lack of clarification when Ms. Dunham mentioned that. We fully understand what EIA means. We understand that it means you can disconnect. And our proposal in our plan says that we can filter the parking area, but everything else must be disconnected, basically. And that's what we're looking for in the 25%, that they have to disconnect everything else. The only thing they get any kind of a deal on is getting the parking through the filter.
And that's acceptable to you? That's what you understand you're going to do?
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Briggs? We'll go to speakers. Okay.